Solo. Hello, and welcome to Don't Evolve Beyond. This solo episode, we're talking House of Dragons. We're going to do the whole season 2 review. I'm going to give you my thoughts, as well as I'm going to give you my thoughts on D23, Disney's convention that they have every year. They dropped a lot of big news, a lot of different trailers about Marvel, about Star Wars, and Pixar, and all that. So, stay tuned. Talking House of Dragons and Disney's D23 trailers. All right, let's cue the music. Hello, and welcome to Don't Evolve Me, the place like Ash, Ketchum, Pikachu, we don't evolve, we just level up. And it's just me today. We're going to be talking about House of Dragons. We're going to do a brief review on it, and then I'll be going over all the news and trailers that came out in the Disney 23 Expo. And I don't really have any news today for that reason, because all the news is Disney Expo stuff. And I know what, when we get into the Disney part, specifically Daredevil, I don't mention White Tiger at all for whatever reason, but I want to mention here, I'm happy that White Tiger has an appearance. I don't know much about the character. I know more about the female character than the male character, but really cool. Anyway, I just wanted to add that before I forgot about it. Welcome to Don't Evolve Me. So, it is just me. And this is kind of a weird episode because originally the plan was me, Donald, and or Tom were going to talk about House of Dragons, and I didn't really do much of a review of House of Dragons. I did little snippets here and there, mostly did the Acolyte, mostly did the boys, and was going to do the House of Dragons towards the end. And we still plan on doing that, but it's one of those shows that, like, I have a hard time talking about the show just in, like, with just me, myself, and just breaking it down scene by scene, at least for that show in particular, because I feel like what I have to say about the show doesn't constitute a long podcast. And I still want to give you guys that podcast, because me, Tom, and or Donald, or both of us, or all of us, I think there's a larger conversation that I really want to have with those gentlemen. But I wanted to share my thoughts, give my brief review on the show. But before we do that, let's what am I nerding out on? Well, I recently got a hat, and if you see the other video, I got two new hats. Going to make a Don't Evolve Me hat with the logos. Still working shopping on how we're going to get it done without spending lots of money on it. And then I got this Pirate of Hearts hat from Trafalgar Law. One piece. Anyway, moving on. I don't have much that I'm nerding out on. It's same as last week, Fallout 4. Just been really into it. I bought Game of the Year Edition. Finally got to play the DLC. I got the Automation DLC, and then my account got stolen, and then I never played after that. So it's really cool to go back into Fallout 4, finally actually finish the game, actually make the decision of which faction I chose. And I'll give a sneak preview on that, because I want to do the episode with Tom, the video game nostalgia with Fallout 4 specifically, because I really do want to have an episode talking about that game, especially now that Fallout and Fallout 4 in general is a little bit more relevant because of the TV show. I'll give you a snippet, though, a little spoiler teaser on that. I chose the Institute, and I feel weird about the decision, because, like, the Institute aren't the most morally great, you know, faction. But I have an argument to why I made that decision and why they're the best choice, at least for my character. But yeah, been all about Fallout 4 lately, Far Harbor, the DLC, that's where I've been getting into. And I honestly think that faction, the three factions of Far Harbor and, like, that choice is a lot more interesting. I can't wait to finish it and give you guys my thoughts on it. But yeah, that's what I've been nerding out on. I watched a little bit of One Piece the last week or so, but mostly it's been Fallout. So yeah. Speaking of news, don't have any news other than what we talked about in D23. So let's get into House of Dragons. And I kind of want to give some context about like my view of House of Dragons. Because before this episode, or before we started Don't Evolve Me, before I decided to make a podcast, or just after I decided to make a podcast, like I was on Rose Show, I wanted to do some type of project, and I made the decision, hey, we're going to make Don't Evolve Me. I'm going to just finally do it and get it done. And when I made that decision, one of the shows that came out was House of Dragons. And I'm a huge Game of Thrones fan. I really enjoy that world. I enjoyed that TV show. I've read at least the first book. It's a great book. I struggle just with reading in general. ADHD in me just cannot really focus. And even the book I read was an audiobook, so I didn't even read it. But Game of Thrones has been something that ever since I jumped into it, I really love and am fascinated with the world and just the storytelling in general. I enjoy George R. R. Martin's story. I wish he would finish the books so we would get an actual final like end to his grand plan of things. But I enjoy the fact that we got Fire and Blood. I'm excited that we got House of Dragons. My expectations for the show wasn't like great, right? Because we all watch Game of Thrones. It's one of those shows that pretty much almost nearly everybody watched, casual fans included. The first six seasons were by far awesome. They were moved at a snail's pace. But like it was just so satisfying when action finally happened. Like we build up to those moments, and those moments were satisfying. And then the last two seasons happen, and it was just really rushed and felt off. I actually don't think the decisions behind Game of Thrones, season 7 and season 8, I don't think the character, like the actual story itself is that bad. I just think the pacing's horrible. Like you're trying to tell 3 or 4 seasons of story into 2 seasons. And that's where Game of Thrones failed. It should have been at least a season 10. 10 episodes each. Instead, we get shortened season 7, shortened season 8, and you know, we get this really bad narrative. We get this really bad ending. So I wasn't expecting much from House of Dragons. I was expecting more season 7, season 8, Game of Thrones. And I remember watching it, and I remember watching House of Dragons and being like, man, I wish I had a podcast right now because I thoroughly enjoyed it. House of Dragons season 1. It's like diving back into Westeros, diving back to King's Landing. We get to learn more about the Targaryens. And the conflict that they set up in the show is a fascinating concept. And I just love the politics behind all of it. I just did a TikTok recently talk about how I'm really frustrated with our own, the American politics, and how it's just very, in order to just even have an actual discussion about policies, it's just, you have to go and filter out so many like lies and bullshit. At least from one party's side, I will agree that both parties do a bit of both. Or, yeah, not to get too into politics. But I enjoy House of Dragons. I enjoy Game of Thrones because I just enjoy seeing the politics in action. I enjoy people talking and trying to make big decisions. And at least, you know, sitting down, talking with their group, their council, and figuring out, hey, how do we solve these issues? I don't know why. It fascinates me. And I think it fascinates a lot of other people too, because it just seems like it's one of those things that we don't get a lot of, at least not in a really intelligent way. It's really hard to write that type of dialogue, that type of story, while making the actual narrative interesting. And that's what House of Dragons did. House of Dragons, they took the idea of like, hey, we did not have a succession plan. We do not have an heir. So Viserys is going to become the heir, even though we have a female heir. That's back in the days of females are not leaders, right? So, hey, we have an heir, but she's female, so we're going to give it to Viserys. Now he cannot produce an heir. And the whole story is about how he's raising his daughter to essentially take the Targaryen responsibility, the responsibility of the Song of Ice and Fire, which essentially what Game of Thrones dealt with. His whole thing is, hey, she's my heir, she's my heir, she's my heir. And then eventually he does have a son. he dies. And that's essentially like season one and dealing, basically bringing up to the Civil War. And the season one was a lot different than any other season of Game of Thrones. And that makes sense because it's a whole different show. But season two didn't quite do that. Season one did 20 years of storytelling and did it in 8 episodes or 10 episodes. Season two was 8 episodes. And they did it, they did a lot, but a lot of different time skips. And it was kind of refreshing. It was refreshing because like we get like three episodes per time period. We skip, get a few episodes, and then we skip. And it was just fascinating because we get to see, like, we don't have to deal with the slow pacing issues. We see their decisions, and then we see the consequences years afterwards. And it was just a fun, fast-paced House of Dragons. Like, it was just a fun, fast-paced season. And it really felt like the show was going to end after season two. I was not able to do a review because I wasn't starting until the winter. But I really wanted to review that show because I was enjoying it. I was like, hey, we're back in Westeros. We're back in this world. We're back in the politics. We're back just really good writing, really good dialogue, really good conflict. And honestly, it's great. I'm just going to say it's great writing, great dialogue, great conflict. It's just really cool conflict to see happen into like an actual house. And we got to see it. 20 years of it in a really short snippet, and he did it really, really well. And I wish I was able to review it because I was geeking out. I was happy that Game of Thrones was back because I didn't think it was going to be that great of a show. I gave it like a 4-. I didn't think it was like the greatest thing ever. I'm like, it's borderline great. Like, I enjoyed it, but more needed to happen. Season 2 came and went. And I think, like, my expectation, I didn't have a whole lot of expectations for season two. I think, like, I was still expecting the 4-. And 4-minus stuff doesn't really get me that excited. But I was still excited because I was happy that Game of Thrones is back. And I really wanted this show to be great because I wanted to be into this world. And I really think House of Dragons season two is fascinating from, like, a macro perspective. And when I mean by macro perspective, I mean, like, is it meta or is it a meta perspective? Like how our society is now reacting with House of Dragons. Because the first like 3 or 4 episodes, myself included, I think we were all just really excited for this world. I think like, because season two is a lot different than season one. Season one is like a prequel. It is like the thing that sets you up. It's 20 years. It's fast storytelling. It's getting you caught up to the conflict that is the Civil War. And that's what season two is about, is the Civil War. But I think what people don't realize about season two, because I'm getting like, there was a lot of great reviews for season two. And now where something's interesting, now season two is over and people are like, oh, what's wrong with House of Dragons? What can we do to fix it? It's not that great. And I guess like my expectations for House of Dragons and everybody else's expectations were different because I didn't expect much from the season. From my perspective, because I thought this show was going to end with like 2 seasons, maybe 3. And then they decided like, hey, we're going to make it a little bit longer. And essentially like season 2, from my perspective, was going to be essentially a season 1. It was going to set everything up for the Civil War. It was going to essentially set the table. Like, I was expecting some action, but we were going to set the table. That's what I was expecting, especially when they announced that they only had 8 episodes instead of 10. And the show writers, they were disappointed because they were like, hey, we really wanted the season to be to 10 episodes because we had something special planned. So I, at least like when I was going into season two, I knew there wasn't going to be like this big grand finale moment. I kind of realized it was a transition period. But I'm seeing all these reviews, and it seems like a lot of people are disappointed that it was a very underwhelming finale. And it was. It was underwhelming in the terms of a finale. In terms of just a really good episode, I'm still sitting here going like, the show's still great. So let's talk about it, right? Actually, I want to wind back just a little bit. Game of Thrones Season 2 and House of Dragons Season 2, I find there's a lot of similarities. Because what Game of Thrones did with Season 1, right? They introduced you to the Starks, and Ned Stark was the main character. And everything was just kind of revolved around them. Like, there was Daenerys Targaryen, there was other storylines that was happening, of course. But the main character was Ned Stark, right? And if you know, I don't want to spoil Game of Thrones if you haven't watched it, but really you should have watched it by now. But Season 1 Game of Thrones essentially kind of just axes the whole main narrative. And yeah, I just realized how punny I was with that. Try not to spoil it. But they axed the first like narrative part, and it was kind of it shifted everything. It changed everything. It went from peacetime in Game of Thrones and peacetime in Westeros, peacetime in the story, to war. And Season 1 kind of set that up, right? And House of Dragons, even though it took 20 years to do it, did the same thing, right? It was peacetime, and they essentially worked their way up to war. So Game of Thrones Season 2, what they had to do was essentially reset the table. They set the table up, they set the lore up, but then the actions of Season 1 caused for a whole civil war, the whole change of the world, and Season 2 essentially was table setting yet again. And I remember Game of Thrones, I jumped in right when Season 4 was about to start. So I ended up watching Season 1, Season 2, Season 3. And I remember just not really caring that much about Season 2. I thought Season 2 just of Game of Thrones was kind of just a boring episode. And I remember when people would rate their episodes, they're like, or their seasons, Season 2 was probably in the bottom. But I think the thing we didn't realize is, and I didn't realize this until I rewatched Game of Thrones again, and I'm probably, the next time I watch it will probably be my fifth time through. Rewatching Game of Thrones, Season 2 is probably my favorite season. Maybe it's because Tyrion is Hand of the King and he, like, that's just gold. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's because I actually understand Stannis' actual, you know, goal and his significance, whereas in the first couple seasons, I didn't quite understood the Stannis storyline. And then those things could be true. But Season 2 was great because, like, it set up things, and when you it just set up the table and kind of just teased you exactly where the story was going. And when you rewatched it, it's just a fun thing to watch. You're like, oh, I know what they're going with that. Oh, I know what they're setting up. And I know I'm not the only one who feels that way, because now when I see power rankings of like the seasons of Game of Thrones, Season 2 is held in high regard. That was not the case, like, when I started watching around Season 4. That was not the case. Season 4 is probably my favorite season. It's probably 4, 2, 1, and then 3. And then probably 6, 5, 7, and 8, if I had to go in that order. But the point is, Season 2 is viewed off as like this really transition season. It's setting the table up. And I think about, I look at House of Dragons, right? We are all expecting civil war. That's what we wanted. We want the civil war. We want a lot of action. And we got that. We got a dragon v dragon fight. We got dragons eating people. Like, we got some pretty good action in the series. But this season was not about the civil war. At least not the big aspects of the civil war. This season was about setting the table. This season was a transitional season. And me personally, I have a hard time judging this season in its entirety, because I'm like, it is setting the table. It is essentially Season 1 of the Civil War. Season 1 itself was essentially just a prequel. And I don't personally mind that storytelling. But I do understand why people are disappointed, because people generally view it season to season. And season two didn't have that big moment, right? At least not that big fight at the end. It didn't have that fight at, the fight of the Blackwater Bay, right? It didn't have that giant fight scene where they're trying to take over King's Landing. We didn't have that. We had dragons be dragon. We have Aemon and Aegon essentially fighting each other and Aemon getting burned to a crisp. Should say that we're doing spoilers for season two. Don't want to spoil Game of Thrones, but we're spoiling season two. But like, we got some moments. But I agree with that people are like, oh, this show is taking its time. I agree. The pacing of the show is odd. This show went from 20 years, fast forward 10 episodes, 20 years of really good storytelling, and then like, hey, Civil War time, move at a snail's pace. We're back to Game of Thrones snail's pace, baby, instead of the beginning. And like, it is weird. It is an odd storytelling decision to do so. And they did so because, one, they wanted to branch it out and they wanted the money from it, right? They want House of Dragons is supposed to end season four, I believe. I think that's the plan, is to end it in season four. They are long. They are increasing the length so that House of Dragons has more story. There's more story to tell, more hype around it. It is what it is. But I'm not going to sit here and say it's bad. It's great. I still watch these shows and be like, there's very like particular moments. Like we get Daemon fucking off and doing nothing for a whole season. Like he essentially was sidelined because I think in the book he goes to Harrenhal, he rounds up the soldiers and that's pretty much it. But you can't do that. Right, we are working our way there. So Daemon is essentially being haunted and he has to work through his own inner turmoil to become the leader that he's supposed to be, right? Or to be a soldier on the path. This, he got the vision at the end of Viserys' sees. Like, it took him eight episodes essentially to get there. And I'm not going to say like that was a great decision. I'm not going to sit here and say like, oh, that's great storytelling. I think it's great in moments. I love the end result. I love where he went to. But yeah, his storyline just kind of seemed like he's just stagnated there. And that's kind of the downside of that decision to essentially slowed everything down. Rhaenyra, I remember the first episode, she didn't really speak. She just cried the entire time. And then after that, she didn't do anything but sit around and essentially listen to her leadership, not respecting her as a leader, which I think is fascinating. But to have that for eight episodes, it's like, ooh, you didn't really do anything. The best action is Rhaenyra's fighting with the dragons, right? And then the dragon pits the riders. And I will say this. I really love the idea of like other dragon riders coming in to help her. I think that's fascinating. Really, they could have just started the show there. I mean, the main character, just a peasant who grew up, learned that they had Targaryen blood and became a dragon rider. Like, I feel like that's the start of a book right there. I feel like that's the start of a potential story for them. I don't really know where I was going with that. My apologies, guys. ADHD ranting. I am alone. No one here is to rein me in. I got to rein myself in. The point is, I understand why people, this won't be like everyone's favorite season. But I keep seeing articles about, oh, this is bad. This is a bad show. How do we fix House of Dragons? I think really the problem is, they didn't have the money or the time to do the big scene. Because like that, the next thing that's happening in House of Dragons is a giant battle in the book. And I don't really know the details of it. I just know it's coming, right? It's the Purple Wedding in Game of Thrones. Again, I'm laughing at the fact that I didn't want to spoil season one, but I'm spoiling House of Dragons, right? It's like the Purple Wedding in Game of Thrones. It was really close. It could have happened in season three, but Red Wedding happened in season three. And it's a big event, and it happens in the beginning of season four. I believe that's what's going to happen in Game of House of Dragons. There was a strike. There is a whole budgeting issue. This is going to be a battle that takes up a lot of money. I do not blame them for ending this at eight episodes and ending where it ends. I understand why people are frustrated by it. But I still look at it, I'm like, I can't judge this full season because it feels like a transition season. But also, the writing and the characters are well told. The pacing's off, and we do have characters who are stagnant. But it's not horrible. And I mean it like not horrible as in like, it's still written very well. It's just a consequence of like outside events, right? Because I feel like if we watched House of Dragons from start to finish, like once the show is ended, I don't think we're going to be that harsh on season two. I don't know if it'll be everyone's favorite season, kind of like season two of Game of Thrones, but I don't think we're going to be that harsh on it. And I have a hard time judging it. Every episode I watch, I'm like, oh, that was great. Or borderline great, right? I'm like, it's good to great. Actually, I lean towards more of a 4-minus. And that's what I'm giving this season, is a 4-minus. I'm like, it just like season one, I'm like, it's a great show. I'm waiting for it to take the next step. I'm waiting for those end moments. Because right now it just seems like a really great narrative where I'm just like, all right, where's the good juicy bits? Where is like the satisfying moment? Where is like the satisfying moment that just brings it all together? And we're still waiting on that. And maybe that's why for season two, we didn't quite get the moment that brings it all together. And maybe that's what we needed in the finale. But I guess I expected this. So yeah, these are my thoughts. I give it a 4-minus. MVP, this is not going to be the official. This will be my personal MVP. I don't know how it's not Aemon. I feel like he's the most interesting character of the show. But I also don't think it's Aemon by a landslide. I think Rhaenyra being the main character definitely deserves it. Daemon, the character and the actor himself, I think you can make an argument for. I don't think you can make an argument for him this season, but I think you can make an argument overall. I think I'm going to give it to Aemon, but I'm not sure exactly. It's not a big lead. I'm curious what Tom or Donald would have to say about this. So yeah, that's my thoughts on the season. It's 4-minus. I thought it was a great show, borderline and just being good. I'm still waiting for the moment to bring it all together. I think that happens in season three. I think it sounds like we are going to get another Dragon v Dragon battle. It sounds like it's supposed to be really great, and the book apparently is really great. This is something that a lot of people are looking forward to, and they were hoping season two had it. It did not have it. But I don't judge it negatively because of it. I'm like, okay, we're on the road, right? We're the journey of the story. It's frustrating that we're not getting the full journey yet, but the journey's still pretty solid. Little stagnant, little road trip here and there that we didn't really need. Spent too much time, you know, at the restaurant. I feel like America and the audience is just an old dad that's on a road trip, right? We're on the journey. And like the dad's just like upset, like, oh, we wasted too much time at the rest stop. I told them 10 minutes. It's been 2 fucking hours. Like, that's what I feel like when I see people complain about House of Dragons. Like, it's just taking too long. But I'm like, me personally, I didn't expect much from the season. And I'm enjoying it. I think every episode's a great episode. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just me. 4-minus. Aemon is my MVP. That could change. I don't think he's a strong lead. All right. I am out. Stay tuned. We're going to talk about Disney at D23. I recorded that yesterday. All right. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about Disney D23. Disney 23. I don't ever remember what that conference is called. anyway, I want to talk about it a little bit because there's a lot of things that they dropped on us that, like, I wasn't really expecting. And I feel like I should be expecting these things because Disney's been dropping a lot of stuff lately. And I feel like not a lot of us have been overly prepared for the moment. Generally, in the last 10 years or so, these are like one of the most hyped up moments that, like, during the summer, us nerds are just like ready for it. But the last 5 years or so, it seems like Disney really, and other companies as well, just hasn't really been going to a lot of these Comic Cons, and they've been doing a lot of their own things, but usually it's like, you know, spaced out. But this year has been different for Disney, specifically Disney. They dropped a bunch of stuff for us at San Diego Comic-Con, and now D23, which I didn't realize was in August. I thought this was going to be in September. I'm used to things being dropped in September. Maybe it's because that's DC has been dropping a lot in December, and I don't know if DC is. Usually I'm pretty good on top of this stuff, but I haven't really heard much lately. Also, I didn't realize Disney was going to drop this weekend, but here we are talking about D23, because they dropped a lot of stuff. This was just going to be the House of Dragons review. And again, just like Deadpool and Wolverine, Disney is like, all right, let's just drop a shit ton of news on you. So let's go through it. The first thing that I seen, like the first like little bit of news that I saw going on my feed, because yesterday was a family day, so I wasn't overly paid attention. And I was also watching Vikings preseason football. I am a huge football fan. Also huge basketball fan. Gold medal as Olympics gold medal basketball, like that was also the title match was happening. So like my attention was not on this, and the first thing that like popped up in my feed when I was able to finally look at my phone to like check out the news, and I do this often just so I can give you guys the news when we talk about it every Tuesday. First thing I saw was live action Stitch just popping in through the title card, and I'll say this: he sounds great. Looks wise, I don't get the live action remake. I do get it, but I don't get it. From an artistic standpoint, I don't get it. But from a capitalistic money side of things, it makes sense. I know a lot of people complain, like, why do we need more live action? Because, like, live action just doesn't necessarily recreate what happened in animation. Like, they're fine. There's some movies that are, like, I've watched, like, that are decent. Lion King, The Jungle Book. I haven't watched a whole lot of the live actions, but they're fine. They're decent. But they don't necessarily like recreate the magic. And so with the whole Lilo and Stitch news, and I was a really big Lilo and Stitch fan when I was a kid. Like that was one of my favorite movies growing up. And that's a movie I'll throw on for my own kids now, and they usually love it. So like the idea of like a live action Stitch, I was like, kind of interested. He looks fine. Stitch looks fine. I'm not necessarily excited for it. I didn't see that image and go, yes, Lilo and Stitch. The only thing I'm really excited about is like I can take my kid to go see it, and I'm hoping they like it. But we already have the original movie. So I look at Lilo and Stitch, live action Lilo and Stitch, and I see it for what it is. It is literally just a cash grab. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. I do not. I also don't want to spend all this time talking about the Disney side of things, but I kind of want to bring it up initially and give you my thoughts on it. Because because the Disney stuff is the first stuff I looked at, like the Disney movies, the kid movies, you know, a lot of the movies I watched as a kid. And I remember just watching it and just thinking that it was fake. Like, and that's how I felt about San Diego Comic-Con when I heard about the news about RDJ being Dr. Doom. And Avengers Doomsday, like, I thought it was fake, and it's probably because I just watched The Boys, I just reviewed The Boys, watched it two or three times through, just so I can give you guys the best review possible, and kind of the different insight of things. But they just did their own, like, VOT 52, or their own, like, VOT convention, and they were making fun of Disney, and just, I want to read some of the titles, because The Boys has their own like account called VOT International, and they pretend like they're actually VOT, and they're talking earlier this week, and I know they did this intentionally to make fun of Disney, because Disney had the D23, and at least they're on top of it because they did their own movie release. And I just want to read some of these because these are hilarious. Firecracker, coming out in Phase 7. Firecrackers, Lord Soldier. The Deep, Secret of Atlantis. Homelander, Land of the Free, Home of the Saved. The Seven, Reborn, Super School. The Deep, Lifeguard Summer. The Seven Returns, Firecrackers, Heaven's Miracle. G2, G-Men. The Deep, Into the Multiverse. The Deep, Gods and Dolphins. Literally, The Deep has like so many movies. And like, there's more. There's a lot more. They even talk about how like A-Train, they'll just unexpectedly cancel all of A-Train's stuff. And they just wipe it off as tax credit. Like, I'm so used to just, like, the VOD stuff, the fake stuff. So, like, when Disney actually has their convention and they actually release things, my brain's just like, this is fake. This is fake. It feels like we're in an alternate universe. But it's not. I double-checked the sources. Like, at the time when I was, like, seeing it, I double-checked the sources. I'm like, oh, man, it's not fake. So this is all the Disney this is all the Disney films that we're getting. I'm putting Pixar into this as well. I know they're two separate companies, but I'm just going to throw it all in. We're getting live-action Stitch, Moana 2, Zootopia 2. We're big Moana and Zootopia fans already, so I'm actually kind of excited for the kids. Frozen 3, Incredibles 3, Toy Story 5. Just when you think, like, how much more Toy Story can we get, they give us a fifth one. And Mufasa, the live-action Lion King prequel. They showed the whole trailer for it. And man, like, I was just looking at, like, all the release. And I'm just like, is this fake? Like, it just seems like we're getting a lot. And let's break it down. Moana 2 is Zootopia 2. Moana 2, like, it makes sense. Moana's really popular. A lot of little girls like it. A lot of just families like it in general. And in our household, Moana is a fun watch. Zootopia is also another movie that, like, our kids really seem to enjoy it. When it is on, they watch it. And that's how I know, like, my kids like the show. If, like, they're off running around, yeah, they don't really care about it. But, man, if they sit on their couch and they don't move the entire movie, that's a good one. Moana, Zootopia, they do the trick. So we'll see with Moana 2, Zootopia 2. Frozen 3 makes sense. Frozen's huge. And look, all these are probably mostly cash grabs, but Disney kind of needs it. So it makes sense. Incredibles 3, being a superhero fan, as you can tell, you can look in the background, you see superheroes everywhere. Superman cape, comics on the wall, pop vinyl. I enjoyed The Incredibles. The first movie was great, and I love rewatching it. Incredibles 2 is okay. It's a solid movie, but it's not a groundbreaking movie. Like, The Incredibles was kind of groundbreaking. It was very adult. It's really a lot of themes that we just haven't really seen in Incredibles. It reminds me of, like, Watchmen. It reminds me, I don't want to say The Boys. There's another one. It's a superhero story that was new at the time. The idea of, like, superheroes being retired. And then, like, you have to come back to actually save the day. Like, it was a newer theme that we just haven't really explored, at least in movie formats. Watchmen covers it a lot. It reminds me a lot of Watchmen. But the first film was great. The second one just seemed like a meh superhero story. So seeing Incredibles 3, I'm like, great. I like these characters. I want to know what happens next. I want to see if they, like, grow up and evolve. Like, seeing Jack-Jack is, like, just like a kid, like a toddler, or just a school-age kid would be incredible to see, because I wanted to know, like, does this baby get, you know, like, does this baby become a villain? Because he's very kind of all over the place. Or does he become this really wild card of a hero? Where does Dash and Violet go? Where does Mr. and Mrs. Incredible go with their superhero careers now that superheroes are back? It's like, I feel like there's a lot of branches for a really good story, but I also pretty sure this is just a cash grab. And I don't blame them. Disney's kind of struggling for money here. A lot of their stuff isn't working anymore. So, you know, throw out all these sequels, like, yeah, they're going to get money from it. But Toy Story 5. So, Toy Story is like the first movie I've ever been to in theaters. I'm 31 years old now. The first story came out when I was like 2. And that was the first movie I've ever seen in theaters. So the idea of there being a Toy Story 5 coming out, I don't know how I feel about it. Toy Story 1 through 4 were great. They're all great movies. I think the only one I would say, like, between 2 and 4, maybe they're just in the 3 plus range. Maybe I gotta do a state of review for Toy Story movies. Maybe when Toy Story 5 comes out. We'll see. I don't know if we'll... I don't want to commit to that yet. That's a lot. State of reviews take a lot of time. But I will say this. If a movie franchise comes out and like, hey, we're going to give you Toy Story 5 or we're going to give you John Wick 5. And the other four movies were great. Usually I'm okay with the fifth one. But I will say, 3 and 4, you had great places to just back away and leave it. And I wish Pixar would just do that with this property. I wish Disney would just leave Toy Story alone. Because you have a great ending for 3, you got a great ending in 4, and I don't know how many more movies you can have it be great or good. I don't know how much more movies you have. Sometimes it's just best to leave things, you know, like leave the project in great form. But no. Toy Story 5 is coming out. It's supposed to be about the idea of like kids are no longer playing toys. They're now playing video games or they're watching movies and tablets. Which I will say is a cool topic, a cool theme to talk about because it's very relevant. But also not as explored, at least from the perspective of a toy. So, like, I'm intrigued, but I also just wish they let it die. Speaking of letting things die, Mufasa. I know you guys, nostalgia-wise, are probably like, oof. Remembering the scene of Simba and Mufasa. Simba going, Dad. I watched the trailer of Mufasa. It's fine. The idea of, like, the story of Mufasa and Scar becoming brothers, it's an alright story, but I just, live action Lion King does not work. It really doesn't. This is like one of those stories where like, if this, you take the same story, you stick the same trailer, you put it into some gorgeous animation, I am in as a dad. And I know I'm not the population, right? I am not the, that movie isn't for me. But here's the thing. With every single one of these movies, they're not necessarily for me, they're for my kids. I know this. But Toy Story and Lion King were shows that came out when I was a child. And the parents decide who goes to the theaters. Which is probably why they're coming out with Toy Story 5 and Lion King. They're like, hey, millennials are going to want to share this with their kids. And they're right. They are. But man, live action Mufasa story, show an animation. Would have been cheaper. Maybe. I think it would have been cheaper. If I remember correctly, CGI is more expensive than, you know, animation. I guess it depends. I hear Spider-Verse isn't like super cheap. At least like time-wise, it's not that cheap. But I would have been more into it just animation. I think live action just doesn't work because lions don't really emote emotion. And if you want to be portray a realistic lion, they don't emote emotions. So it doesn't quite work to tell a human. And like Lion King for the most part is about lions, but it's a human story. It is a human-like story, and that's what Lion King is. It's based off Hamlet. So therefore, animation works because you can emote the lions. Live action, CGI, you can emote them. It's just going to look weird because lions don't emote emotion. So I know it's one of those stories that it never gets. But right, let's move on to more of the nerdy things. Sorry to spend 15 minutes all on the Disney side of things. But I didn't want to talk about it because, like, I feel like my age group is millennials, and this is a lot of things I think millennials grow up with. They grew up with Disney. I grew up with Disney. So let's talk. Let's get into Avatar, and then we'll get into Star Wars and Marvel. Avatar, Fire and Ash is the third film. And I heard someone talk about the joke that Avatar is like becoming Avatar the Last Airbender, where we're just getting all the elements. You know, the first one was air and trees, maybe. I don't know if you'd call that air or earth. I'd say earth. Second one, way of water, you know, water. Now we're getting fire and ash. We're getting the mountain tribe, the volcano tribe, fire. I don't know. It's one of those movies where I'm like, it's all right. The first two were okay. Like CGI, the effects look great. Like Way of Water, I was just kind of blown away by the actual effects. The story itself, not the greatest. It's hard. So they're trying to make this, and it's also weird because Avatar was Fox, but now it's Disney, and now it's part of D23, which is, it's just odd. So I'll watch it. I'll cover it on here too. Avatar, Fire and Ash. We'll see. But I'm happy they revealed it, though. I will say that. All right, let's get into Star Wars. So they revealed three things for Star Wars. They revealed more concept art for Andor Season 2. I didn't really see a whole bunch about it, but I know that they were talking about Andor Season 2. I'm just excited for it. If you are a Star Wars fan and you haven't seen Andor, even if you're not a Star Wars fan, Andor is great. It's just a great show. It's elite. I talk about it a lot, but it's also slow burn. It's one of those shows that, like, you have to kind of appreciate just solid writing. It's not, like, in your face, like, hey, look at me, I'm amazing. It's not necessarily for the casual fan. It's not necessarily for the casual Star Wars fan, since Star Wars is very casual. Like, any fan can just jump into Star Wars and enjoy it. My parents are, like, the measure for me for casual fans. One cold Minnesota winter during the polar vortex where it was like negative 40 degrees for a whole week. They didn't go anywhere for a whole week. They just been watched Star Wars and they enjoyed it. They ended up going and seeing The Last Jedi in theaters because of it, which is, I was surprised. I didn't even believe them. I thought they were pulling my leg, but no. Andor isn't really like that. Andor, you can't just jump in and enjoy it. But it's also one of those shows where, like, if you just give it time, if you let it breathe, and if you can push through it, you really appreciate it. Because it is just gorgeous writing, but it takes a lot to understand it. It's kind of how I feel about Rogue One, too. But yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of news on Andor from what I've seen. Mandalorian and Grogu is now filming now. And I think that basically just confirms, like, we're not getting a season 4 yet. We're getting a film, and they showed a couple locations, a couple scenes that I, and it's basically just them on a, it seemed like a tropic planet. I didn't get a whole lot of news from what I dig, but they were talking about it. The biggest thing to take away from it is that they're filming now for it, which is exciting. So it means we're probably getting it in the next year or so. But the big thing they did drop, Skeleton Crew, probably, unless you're paying attention like I am, probably didn't know that this was coming out with Jude Law being one of the main characters. I didn't know much about it. I just knew it was going to be a mainline story and Jude Law was a part of it. And it was supposed to come out this year. It is coming December 3rd, I believe. Early December. They just dropped the trailer for it. And it reminds me of like a coming of age children's story. Because the story is mostly surrounded by a group of kids who get lost in the space. And they have to like go on an adventure to find their way back. And that's the sense I got from it. And Jude Law plays like this old Jedi. And it's supposed to be during, I believe, when the Empire, between, you know, the prequels and the original trilogy. And from what I saw, it looks pretty good. Like, it genuinely looks like a good show. I'm interested in it. I like the Stranger Things, Super 8, The Stand. Like, I enjoy those stories. It's just the idea of, like, coming into the age, being a little boy, being a little girl, and just kind of, like, figuring yourself out. Going on an adventure. I like those type of stories. And I think there's a lot of space in Star Wars for telling a story like that. And generally, I'm just like, I think they could hold back on Star Wars a little bit, but I also don't mind them telling stories in this universe that is just different. And this might be one of those shows that gets kids into Star Wars. So we'll see. I'm not going to hold my breath. Star Wars has been kind of hit and miss. The last six TV shows or all their TV shows have been hit and miss, but we'll see. Right, that's all Star Wars. Let's get into Marvel. And Marvel, other than like the Disney TV, I keep saying TV, Disney movies, Marvel had quite a bit that they dropped. All right. Actually, I'm going to take a quick break and then we'll get into it. All right, so let's get into the Marvel stuff. So they dropped a bunch of trailers. And some people were expecting, like, we're wondering if they reveal more information, any information, because they just dropped a bunch of Marvel news about Robert Downey Jr. coming back as Doctor Doom, Doomsday, Secret Wars, all of that. But they didn't really talk about the future of the MCU. They really just talked about the projects that are coming up next, except for Thunderbolts. I don't know if they really talked about Thunderbolts. Not from what I've seen, at least not any like new information. First up, Captain America: Brave New World. They dropped the new trailer, and they showed Red Hulk in full glory. And man, he looks good. I gotta say, like very CGI, but he does look good. I know I just complained about live action Stitch a little bit ago. It's a different reason. Different reason. I like animation more. Okay, so a little bit of more reveal. Falcon, there's gonna be a new Falcon that replaces Sam Wilson's Falcon. I forget the character's name, but he was the Falcons in the comics, especially when Sam Wilson did take over Captain America. His suit is all black. I say Google it looks pretty nice. Harrison Ford seems like his Thaddeus Ross character. Man, I like blanked on his name for a second. So I took a break. Cleared up the mind a little bit. His character revealed that he's a president, he gets shot at, and looks like he's about to become Hulk in front of everybody, which is interesting. It's an interesting plot point to have one Thaddeus Ross be the president of the United States, especially with his history with like Civil War and Incredible Hulk. Rip RIP the original actor, I forget his name. I know he was in other projects. Harrison Ford takes over. That's a whole issue that I don't know how I feel about, but Harrison Ford is great, and I'm happy that this character is still in the comics, and I'm happy that we're getting Red Hulk. The President of the United States being, let's just say United States, wonderful. President of the United States also being a Red Hulk after assassination attempt. It's intriguing. And it seems like he gets a couple assassination attempts because in the trailer, he gets shot like indoors and outdoors, or like someone attacks him outdoors. And one of the people who shot him is Isaiah Bradley, who was in the Falcon and Winter Soldier series as like another super soldier, another Captain America. It's intriguing. We get the final, like, we get another trailer scene of the, I was going to say the Falcon Captain America, Sam Wilson's Captain America flying around Tiamat from Eternals. Going through airplanes, and Adamantium is also definitely being brought in, which is exciting for the world of like X-Men. Not a whole lot of like new information, just different like plot points. A whole trailer just gives us a little bit more information about the film. Someone's gonna be trying to kill Harrison Ford, Thaddeus Ross as president. It seems like it's gonna be Isaiah Bradley and also Giancarlo Esposito's character, Sidewinder. Also seems like he's gonna be part of the attack. And there's one villain that we haven't seen yet who's supposed to be part of this, which is the leader. We have three villains in this movie. We have the leader, who we haven't seen yet in the trailers, at least from what I've seen. We have Red Hulk, Thaddeus Ross, and we have Sidewinder, Giancarlo Esposito. We'll see if this movie is good. There was a lot of reshoots. It's the same people from Falcon and the Winter Soldier, or at least the same producer, showrunner. I believe the showrunner is the director. I'll have to double check on that. We'll see. I think I'm going to get more excited about this movie as it comes up. I'm expecting a 3-3 plus film. If it's more than that, great. I'm not expecting it. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Daredevil, Born Again, gets a new trailer. And I kind of hate how our the at-home movie-making skills is getting a lot better, which is wonderful. It's great. It's great for us who like to do skits. I just did a skit with Ernie this weekend that we're going to release later this week. You guys might have already seen it since this is coming out Tuesday, and I plan on releasing Monday. It's great for that reason. But man, there's so many fake trailers out that like you watch it and it kind of seems real, but like it's not. And that was the first trailer that I watched, was a Daredevil Born Again trailer that is actually was really close. But it was just all these old footages from like Netflix, She-Hulk, and Echo was the other series. The series that I keep forgetting that exists. And it was so bad. Like, at first I thought it was real, but it was a really bad trailer. But it was really similar because the actual trailer, which I saw bits and pieces of, was Kingpin, who is now mayor, talking to Matt Murdock about an alliance, saying that they've come to agreement, but if Kingpin becomes Kingpin of old, Daredevil would be there to bring him down. We get a shot of the Punisher, Frank Castle, John Bernthal's Frank Castle, mind you, attacking Matt Murdock, and Matt Murdock being like, hey, Frank, it's me, it's Daredevil. We see a little bit of pictures of Foggy and Karen. They are in the season. We get confirmed that Bullseye is going to be in the show. At least he's going to be in prison, which is exciting because it's like MCU is officially getting now Bullseye. Kingpin has been around for a while. And we also, I don't know if this is confirmed, but it seems like the main villain is going to be Muse from the Charlie Soule run. And I'm not too familiar with that run. I started reading Daredevil, like, and you can see it in the corner, Daredevil and Spider-Man, like, right there for those who are watching the video. I started reading it. Who is the artist? Who's the writer? I forget. Man, I am mad at myself for forgetting this because I know he's a great writer. Let me check one second. Chip Zdarsky, great writer. That's like when he took over, that's when I started really getting into the Daredevil comics. So I'm not too familiar with Muse, but I know that run in the comics is really highly regarded and I should definitely watch it or read it. Apologize for the constant mix-ups. All right. And the last little bit of news, season 2 has been confirmed as well. And I believe this show should be 18 episodes, which is really weird for a Marvel show. Like, they're usually like a 6-episode show to like at most, I think 9 episodes is the most that we've had. They usually run these shows like a small movie and it's not the greatest. So seeing 18 episodes, like, I hope they keep it. And I hope it means that we're going to get a really good show. We will see. This is the project that I mentioned that I'm most hyped for. I'm becoming a really big Daredevil fan. I really like Charlie Cox's Daredevil as well. The Netflix show is honestly one of the best superhero shows of all time. I don't know if there's anything that beats that. I'm going to have to do some rankings on that. It's definitely one of the best shows. And it's definitely a show that I'm going to be rewatching before we get Daredevil Born Again. I will commit to that. Toy Story State of Review, we will see maybe like a couple of years from now. But yeah, all right, that's Daredevil Born Again. Fantastic Four. There was a new trailer that was shown from what I've seen re-teaching at college. It's really a short trailer. Did they show a trailer? I just seen the images. I didn't see the trailer itself. Johnny Storm was in a suit. I know they did a lot. I'd seen a lot of footage of like different suits and different colors of the suit, and it looks very retro. And I really like the retro vibe that this movie is giving off. And there is a rumor that I heard about, and I really love this rumor. And the rumor is that the Fantastic Four family is set in another universe, but the Fantastic Four family that we are seeing is actually from our universe. And the origin story of how they got their powers might be the thing that gives them their powers is the thing that also transferred them to another universe that they're currently in, the 60s retro universe. And I think that'd be a really cool idea, because it explains the story of like where the Fantastic Four like went, why they weren't part of our story, but also why they have futuristic like technology and, you know, clothing options. I don't know. It's an interesting like creative process, and I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, Fantastic Four looks great. I like the fashion. I like the suit. The suit is, if you haven't seen it yet, I say Google it. It is like blue, but it has like white shoulder sleeves. It looks retro and new at the same time, but it also looks like, it doesn't look like the final suit. Because in the Fantastic Four movies from 2005, I believe 2005 era, yeah. And the suit from Deadpool and Wolverine, I guess, spoilers, the Johnny Storm suit from Deadpool and Wolverine, it's very modern, right? It's just plain blue. It looks like an actual suit you would wear to do a scientific experiment. Whereas like the suits from this film doesn't really look like a professional suit you would wear, but it like looks like it would be a suit from like a 60s futuristic world, which is what they're set in. And I just kind of just like that they're going with that vibe. And I like it. I love it. It looks cool. It really does. The blue and white, like, it just has a blue and white classic feel. I don't know how to explain it without showing it to you. So yeah. Fantastic Four was like number two on my list of things I'm excited for. I think this is Marvel's ticket into becoming that powerhouse franchise it once was, as well as the X-Men. All right, so we have two other shows to talk about. I guess three other shows to talk about, but two other like main points, and then we'll be done. All right, Agatha. It was Agatha all along. New trailer. They just dropped it. It's going to start where Agatha was powerless, and she has to walk the road with her coven that she gets. And she has to do a bunch of trials to get her powers. And that's pretty much it. We get to see Aubrey Plaza's character. We don't really know who her character is, but she seems crazy. And possibly the villain that turns on all of them. That'd be my guess. But she looks... Aubrey Plaza, huge fan of her. She looks great in this TV show. It looks like there's a Wicked Witch and a Good Witch that's also part of the coven that's going to be joining. It looks okay. I'll be watching it. I'll be commenting on it. I don't know if I'll do it week to week, but maybe at least like half point. If not, we'll watch the whole thing. We'll be watching WandaVision to just kind of get caught up in the story. I'm excited for it. It's going to be around Halloween. My wife's really into the witch lore aspect of it. I mean, my daughter's named after a comic book based off witch lore. The comic book is like the project that me and my wife were working on. So, like, I'm personally, like, kind of invested in the story a little bit. But I didn't watch the trailer and be like, ooh, this looks good. It kind of just looks meh. A lot of the dialogue that was in the trailer was just kind of generic dialogue, which is generally the dialogue that's shown on trailers. We will see. It looks okay. I'm interested in the witch lore aspect of it. I'm hoping it expands the lore of the MCU. But I'm also just questioning, like, why was this a show in the first place? I don't know. Speaking of other shows, they did release a little bit of information. I haven't seen a whole lot, but they released footage of the Spider-Man animated show that they wanted to do. They showed off Norman Osborn. the character is going to be one of the main, I don't know if I want to say antagonist, because I didn't get the sense that he's necessarily antagonist, but one of the main characters in the show. And it's one of those shows that I'm like, we'll see. Like, when it comes out, I'll watch it. I'll give an opinion then. I like animation. I wish we had more hype for animation. There's not a whole lot of hype around it. And I don't know if this is just a show. I don't know what the type of show this is, right? Is this just a show to get money that's just kind of being made? Or is this going to have a lot of like heart into it? We'll see. They also showed footage for Marvel Zombies. I don't have much more information on that. And I don't know how I feel about Marvel Zombies. We will see when it comes out. All right, that's all I got for you guys. Yeah, Disney, D23. I didn't believe, at least all the Disney kid movies that are coming out, I didn't really believe it because, man, the boys made fun of all the sequels and then Disney's just like, here, here's all the sequels that are coming out. I did forget. Hoppers. It's the one original movie that is coming out for Pixar. Or is it Disney? I don't remember. Looks fine. It's not for me, man. It's for my kids. All right. That's it. Jake from Don't Evolve Me. Thanks for listening. I am